should be that little bit,
roll it up, take a hit.
So is my wife.
Feeling like 2 a.m. summer night. I don't care, hand on the wheel, driving drunk,
this.
I'm doing my thing. Rolling the mid beside and out, living my life, getting out dreams. I'ma do just what I want, looking ahead, no turning back. People told me so, my role. I'm screaming out, fuck
is
that.
There,
I'm screaming out, fuck
else?
That.
Like, I'm screaming out,
fuck that, fuck that, fuck that.
This radio show hosted by Jeffrey Pritchett.
7
p.m. Eastern.
Friday.
Nice. Follow your weird.
It dropped us out, huh?
Do it again. Hit him back.
Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. Please hold and you will be able to listen to the show.
Huge event. Very, very expensive event. The House of Cards consequently fell right afterwards, and it made a huge tear in the ufology community. And I was offering up my opinions about the entire thing. We've had discussions, we've had debates, we've had arguments, in a sense, both on this show and on A World Awakening, with regards to people in the community. And in many of those circumstances, I was the underdog. I was given the absolutes of this field and what should be and what shouldn't be accepted or considered. So, that being said, it was Diane Hilbert who had sent me the link to Mind Cemetery, and I listened to this man talk, and I was, first of all, so pleased that there was somebody out there who was like-minded to what I was saying about this entire scenario. I was absolutely impressed by his opinions to this, his knowledge to this, how articulate he was in giving this information. It was an hour and 40 minutes straight of just this individual talking, and a lot of the points that I was making, he was making also. So I wanted him to come on tonight and get into discussion about this and some other things in the paranormal community also. But if I were to scale his knowledge about all of this compared to mine, I am probably in about second grade, where he is a senior in high school. So we're going to pick his brain about this and give him that time also to discuss what it was he was talking about and some updates in regards to the Mexico Roswell scandal. So I'm very happy to have him join us on the show tonight. Without any further ado, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to Primetime Paranormal, Chip Pleasure. It's a pleasure to have you, Mr. Pleasure, on the show.
Thank you very much, George. It's always nice to be called upon for my ranting opinions, you know, as I like to call them sometimes.
Chip, I'd like to introduce you to my co-host. I'm here in Central Florida, and he actually is in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, Mr. Michael Bowler.
Hi, Chip. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Fantastic, Mike. I'm glad you came along. I knew when I saw Andrea wasn't going to be here, I said, okay, you know, we'll roll on anyway, because I have a feeling that she had some questions for me, and I had a couple for her, and I was prepared for the back and forth that would ensue, but, you know, we'll go forward as is, I guess, right?
Always happy Andrea in the chat. We can always get her to call in.
There we go. I'm sure we can ruffle some feathers.
But
Let's go back and let's recap this scenario. And of course,
sure.
I'll give the Reader's Digest version, and then please interject also. But the way this whole scenario came to my knowledge, again, there are those that I know in the community that are involved in the ufology part of the umbrella. My background primarily is in the spirit phenomena, going out mm-hmm. to all these incredibly haunted locations, investigating. But when you do the show like this, you have to cover the full gambit. And when this was brought to my attention through postings on Facebook primarily that this event was going to be happening, and it was on Cinco de Mayo, so and it was a an event that was going to be happening in Mexico City, that it was a huge auditorium, and they were going to blow the roof off of the ufology community. They were going to blow the roof off the governments who have not disclosed. This was going to be the breach, the breakthrough, the epiphany that we have been hoping for so many years. And it, well, it kind of fell short, didn't it?
It fell short by a mile and fell flat on its face real quick. And if I can quote the great Richard Dolan, these slides will be a part of the conversation for a long time to come. You know, and I may not have gotten that quote right, but I think everybody feels me on exactly what he was saying afterwards. And oh, how the worm has turned after that, because now it's all, forget about it, let's move on, I'm dropping the subject. Just amazing how that happens, isn't it?
Yeah, you probably at least caught wind of the fact that we had Richard on 2 weeks ago. And things got heated, and I actually did something that I never, ever do. And I actually apologize to our listeners because I shut down. I muted because I was not going to get the discussion that was needed, and it would never happen anyway. Unless, again, right. circumstances like when he appeared on George Norrie and it was the Mutual Admiration Society, they weren't asking the hard questions. How
right.
important
Did you,
is it?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Now, how important is it that we do ask these questions, though, Chip?
Oh, man, number one. You know, accountability is number one when it comes to people that want to tout their credibility being above reproach. You know, therein lies a lot of the issues for me. And this isn't a drum I had been beating, you know, my entire time of doing, you know, a radio show here on the Mind Cemetery. I started out on Blog Talk Radio like you guys. I love the platform. I love the options it provides you. You know, I love the chat rooms it has. I love the ability to drop in sound bites and all that good stuff. It's a great platform. Loved it, you know. But I had to, you know, I went on to go with UPRNTalkRadio.com here and Joe Montaldo, and every once in a while he gets to come out and do his job as producer a couple times a week for me, because I do this and I also do a sports show, which is completely, you know, a 180 to this kind of genre, you know. So not a lot of crossover, but at least I know on Tuesday nights when people tune in, they're specifically there for the sports, because it's out there that that's not the time to tell me your abduction story and how you've been probed, you know. But when it comes to how important all this stuff is, and number one for me is accountability, because like I said, I wasn't banging the drum against Richard Dolan for a long time until I started seeing some cracks in the facade, and I started thinking to myself, man, what is going on here? You know, he's hyping up this breakaway society, the secret space program shenanigans, and playing off of the fears and the hatred of the government that a lot of people have in this genre, you know, because everybody likes to think that Big Brother's out there fooling us constantly in one aspect, and then in the other, they can't stop a terrorist attack to save their life. So, you know, pick a lane, as I like to say lately. You know, which is it? You have this omnipotent, all-knowing government, or are they a bunch of bumbling fools? So that's another thing I started figuring out, too, during this whole thing is when you start pointing out the flaws in the sacred cows in the community, their peoples come out to help them in force, you know, because they've spent a lot of time in their careers building this, you know, immovable object, this mass, this ball rolling down the hill that says, yes, they're credible, yes, they're nice people, you know, because that's that's a lot of what you hear in return about a lot of these sacred cows is they're nice people, right? Everybody's their friend, right? You hear that all the time. So, you know, so-and-so is my friend and all that. No, it kills me because the reality of it is that you're just associated on Facebook, all right? They're not your real friend. You know, they're not helping you out when your nuts are in a vice. You know, they're not helping you out when you're in a jam at home. You know, they're not coming to pick you up from the airport. You know, they're not that kind of friend, folks. You know, they're just associate friends. And moreover, if you can't scratch their back, see how long that friendship lasts. Watch what happens when you start being critical of them. Because then you get the ire starting to be focused in on you then. You know, and you get told that you have things like an agenda and all this kind of stuff. And it's like, you know, my only agenda is trying not to be lied to, all right, and calling out nonsense. So if that's an agenda, then hang it on me. You know, pin it on my back, paint it on a red nose, and put it on me, you know. So that's what I don't get, is that the accountability that you try to press on these people gets completely lost in translation because they see it instantly as an attack. And when it comes to... And I did go back and listen to your interview with Dolan, and I gotta tell you, you did a hell of a job, George. You know, you came out here earlier saying that I was a senior and you were in second grade. No, brother, let me tell you, we're all just kind of in kindergarten and elementary school still, because there's a whole nother level to this game. You know, there's many layers to this onion. There's a lot of heads in this cabbage, you know, that have to be peeled back and see what's really going on under there. And I kind of discussed this with a little group of friends that I have, a very small group. It's only a couple people on Facebook that we shoot things back and forth on, and they like to listen in. And one of them draws the ire of a lot of people by the name of Jeffrey Pritchett, and he seems to be a boogeyman for a lot of folks because he's maybe not as tactful as he should be. You know, he says some things that shouldn't be said, let's put it that way. And, you know, it's a hard time, you know, balancing that and having these same folks try to say that, you know, I'm guilt by association with him and all that kind of garbage. Well, that's just lazy. You know, if you can't disseminate and discriminate the difference between me and Jeffrey Pritchett and Joe Blow the Ragman, well, then that's your problem. That's your laziness. That's you wanting to group everybody else in the same basket. You know, so, you know, on them, not on me. I'm sorry. But when you went to battle there in that interview with him, there was a couple things I caught for sure that I said, you won, George. You won in that interview in the fact that you got a man who I think we can all agree is very articulate, very smooth talking, very organized when he talks, and very astute, should I say, very scholarly at least, presenting himself as, to cuss. You got him to cuss. You know, that, hey, you rattled that cage, baby. You know, you did something I ain't heard anybody do in a long time. And that means you were hitting a nerve he wasn't ready to push. And to think that, and I understand that you had to peel, you know, pull back to keep the peace in your house, so to speak. You know, that's just the way she goes, as they say on the Trailer Park Boys. And I like to quote them every once in a while because it's a funny show to me. But, you know, that's just the way it is sometimes.
I appreciate the accolades. You know, it's just one of those things that I think it's so critically important to keep an open dialogue. And it just was not going to happen in this circumstance. It became a the immovable object, irresistible force scenario where I wasn't going to get anywhere in that interview, in that setup. And again, when it became condescending, when it became personal attacks, there was nowhere to go from that point. I do want to definitely address the backtracking or backpedaling by Don Schmidt also, and what that exactly means. But Mike had some questions and some things he wanted to bring up here also. And let me give you a little character description of Mr. Bowler. Here's an individual that is about as skeptical as they could be in regards to every part of this, cryptozoology, ufology, spirit phenomena, spirit contact, mediumship, but has had experiences which keeps him in the game, so to speak. But he's certainly always going to question a lot of things. And I think as much as Mike has learned from me over the last 3 years of the 8 years I've been doing this, I've learned also from him to step back a little and question things. But Mike, I give the floor to you, sir.
Gosh, I, and Chip, once again, thanks for joining us. I first of all, would like to start with myself. I had a few minutes before the show tonight to kind of read up on you and some of the info that George had sent me for any of our listeners out there. Give us an idea what the basis of your show is, because, and the reason I say that is that I'm not widely accepted in the community because of my skepticism. And
right.
Hearing some of your thoughts early on, I see two like minds here, three like minds on the show tonight, and I just wonder where your following comes from, your interest in this community, and like you said, you have a few friends that you communicate with through Facebook or social media, which is the same here. Kind of give us an idea of your ties to the community, if you could, real quick.
Sure. Great question, big answer, you know. So when I first started out everything way back about 4 years ago and started talking about anything, I was very naive, you know. My naivete showed very much so in a lot of my interviews and a lot of my guests that I chose and my approach to the show. I took the approach of presenting information and letting the listener decide, right? Well, that sounded like a good thing, right? Well, I come to find out that for the most part, though, there's no easy way to put this. In general, the listener for this genre is an idiot, and they're willing to buy anything that comes down the pipe. Okay, as long as someone is smooth talking and articulate and can make a point, you know, and can make a, you know, and have a coherent thought. So I went on that route for about 2 years or so, and then I finally started figuring out, slowly but surely, all the people that I was thinking were credible and good, slowly but surely started to, you know, fall to the wayside. In one scandal or another, with one foot stepping in crap and here and there, and it happened repeatedly, and then me saying, why did I believe in this person? You know, why did I trust this person by what they were saying? And that's when my show really turned, especially in the last year, maybe 2 years, I started turning it to more of just me talking and not being so much guest-centric, because Joe Montaldo kind of put it in my head a long time ago. He said, listen, you know, a lot of people don't tune in for the guests week in and week out. A lot of people, you won't get a big following by having the big names on your show. You really gain audience by gaining people that want to hear you as a host and hear what you have to say and what your opinion is. So I said, okay. I started getting away from the interviews, getting away from more of the woo-woo stuff. Now, don't get me wrong, I love having a woo-woo guest every once in a while. I've had Prophet Yahweh, Donald Ray Walton, if you've ever had him. Go ahead and jot his name down as a guy that you should check out. He's got it all, baby. He's got alien implants, abductees. He's got a spaceship car. He's even got sex with an alien. Man, if you can hit that third rail of sex with an alien, I want to talk to you, brother. You know, you are a fun person to talk to. And that's kind of where I've gone to now, where I'll have a lot of guests on now, where at least I hope the audience that I've started to cultivate understands as this is entertainment. This is entertaining. You know, this is fun to talk about, because you don't hear this on any other show. Because what you have is an atmosphere that's been built up in paranormal radio shows or UFO radio shows, where it's a big love fest, where everybody just thinks everybody's doing wonderful things, and then they move on to the next week and the next episode, you know, and the next big guest. And the big guest that you had, you might have got a bump that week in your numbers. Right. You might have got 50,000 more, 20,000 more people coming in the door for that show. But next week, did they stick around? No, because they were busy chasing the guests that you had. They were busy chasing that celebrity. chase. They're a part of the cult of personality that's been, you know, brought up in the UFO world for the most part. And that's where I've kind of focused my show more towards, on the UFO end of it, at least in the last year. And that's something I got away from, the paranormal aspect of things as well. And I keep telling myself, man, get some paranormal people in here, get rolling with that, you know, because you can get off this UFO shenanigans and tap a different market for a little while. Well, I keep getting stuck in the middle of shenanigans in UFO land. So it keeps pulling me back in, as the Godfather says. But I've had my own experiences, just like you, and still being skeptical about them. And my own experience, at least in growing up with what I call, quote unquote, a UFO experience, or a possible abductions experience, or whatever, you know, and seeing full body apparitions when I'm a kid, you know, and or preteen in that ballpark, you know, seeing that kind of stuff. But it's always been a thing where it's been just me there, you know. So, you know, I can't go out here and tell you, you know, my story is what it is, and that's the hard truth, because I got nobody there to back it up, you know, and I can't turn it into the movie of the week or a book. You know, so I won't be on the Oprah Book Club or the ABC Movie of the Week with my story, because I got nobody there. And that's a big problem that you have in both genres, I think, is that a lot of people want to go with just their story. And it's, you know, you got to always raise your skeptical antenna when that happens and be more skeptical. Now, I've been on paranormal investigations here in Raleigh, North Carolina, up in Creedmoor, North Carolina, north of here, with a group called Inspire that's in here, run by George Mathis and Nikki Murak. They also do like a meetup, you know, a chaps meetup every week or every month, you know, second Tuesday of the month kind of thing. And I kind of fell off the wayside of going and doing that for a while. So I do have some experiences with them that can be corroborated with other people, thank God, right? So I don't have, like, all just my personal me experience when I was a kid, or, you know, here, what was it, 3 years ago, I think it was? Yeah, about 3 years ago, coming up here this August, because it was when my son was two that I actually had some more, quote-unquote, visitation-type things going on, right? And that's why I put the rabbit ears up and say type things, because, again, it was just me, and even though I'm shaking my wife next to me after they all happened, she's saying, shut up and go to bed. You know, so, you know, it's another thing too. What's that?
I said we sound like minded. We really do. I'm surprised I haven't heard about you before. But continue on.
No, it's good that there's more people out there that are skeptical minded that still have that experience, because as you both have probably learned in this whole field, is that as soon as you the term skeptic and debunker is really a derogatory term that they're trying to slap on us, you know? And now that I've kind of changed from being the wide-eyed believer boy, you know, then now I'm getting turned into a skeptic and all this stuff, and they're trying to say all that kind of stuff, or that I have an agenda to tear other people down and all that garbage, you know?
I've said many a times to many people I meet that are not in the community that my role is to go out into the big room and tell everybody that Santa Claus is not real.
Right, crushing dreams is what you're doing,
right.
Basically.
You basically, all the children look at you and they learn to hate you.
Right, so, and I run into those people at the CHAPS investigation that we went into. You know, everybody had their gadgets and gizmos and their EMFs, and we all did the EVP recordings and stuff. I'll do that. You know, I can run a digital recorder and all that. I won't play games with a EMF meter. You know, I'll do a temperature reading type thing. If, you know, we see temperature drops and stuff, I'll do that kind of stuff. But I mean, any more into these things, I think of the two genres, I think the paranormal aspect of investigating it is the closest that you can be scientific with it. You know what I mean? Because I think some of these, locations.
Yes. You know where I want to go with this, and I'm going to throw a metaphor out there for you. Have you seen the movie Swingers?
Oh yeah.
John Favreau's character, Mikey. Yep. You remember when he finally gets the phone numbers and he goes home that night? Do you remember what he does?
Calls her about three or four times.
Right. Continues to leave messages. To me, that's what's wrong with the community when people get involved. We have like-minded individuals that get into this community that, because of all the embellishment, because of all the things that are going on out there, because of all of the praise of the TV shows, which are entertainment, they're not what you would call real research. You know, it's reality television, but it's not reality when you go out to actually
Correct.
Do some real investigating.
Correct.
That this causes the problem that the minute they get involved in this, they become Mikey, and they make all the phone calls, and they shoot their what in the first night, just like he did. That
exactly.
Wouldn't you say that the embellishment in the community and the want to discover, and there's nothing wrong with the want to discover, but this need that I want to say 80 to 90% of the community seems to have to provide everyone else with almost a need, a reason for being there, justification for what they're doing, instead of concentrating on the small things that we actually have out there that I have a great deal of interest in, near-death experiences, energies, residual energies, and things like that, without going into technical stuff. These are things that we could advance the community. These are the things that we could research. Instead, we continue to mirror what we see on television and then slap each other in the face because it either wasn't yours or other people, when guys like you and me come up and say, come on, guys, that's not believable, and please don't insult me by showing me something like that.
Right.
That
right.
The community has become more of an entertainment community and not a real research community. Would you agree?
By all means. And it's become that entertainment community because of the ghost hunters and the Ghost Hunters International and the ghost adventurers and the ghost petters and the ghost veterinarian and the ghost whisperer and all those kind of shows that go out there, because everybody thinks they could be that next muscle shirt guy with the nice hair, you know, telling you that was an EVP, telling you Satan is good, Satan is your pal, you know.
Right.
And it's not a reality, but the intrinsic need that you touched on is, I think, paramount across not only both genres, but I think in human culture, period. You know, because all of these folks, everyone has an emotional need that needs to be filled. And I think a lot of these folks that are involved heavily in the, you know, in the mom and pop organizations and investigations and the groups like that that go to it over and over and over, are looking for validation of their beliefs, and they're looking for other people that can, you know, prop that stuff up, you know, prop those beliefs up and make them feel better about what they're doing with their time. I see a lot of these folks as, you know, empty nesters, you know, retirees, especially in the UFO end of it. I know the paranormal end of it has a much wider spectrum of ages and, you know, and men and women. It's much more balanced than it is in the UFO world, that's for sure. It's definitely something I found very interesting in the sociological aspect of the entire fan base, you know, the entire, what is it?
Mm-hmm.
Not so much the fan base.
I'll throw something else out there too that George hasn't heard me say that I've discussed with others, that your psychic medium community has a lot of hypochondriacs in it.
Oh yes.
Tie that in together.
Oh yes. Yeah. And that's
the empaths. He's talking about the empaths.
Oh yeah, and I think almost every little paranormal group has their own empath or two, and that's their own kind of building of their little cult of personality to prop them up, you know, and to prop their powers and abilities up and talk them up, you know, so they can always go home and say, I got a friend that's a psychic, you know, and that's cool and all that kind of stuff. Well, it is kind of cool to have somebody in your life that does do that kind of things and that kind of thing, and I don't want to downplay that really too much. You know, and make it sound like I'm too elitist in that aspect. And I got a lot of, you know, I tear myself down a lot, and I laugh at myself a lot during my shows, and I like to have fun in that aspect so I can bring it back down to earth and make people realize I'm not all that serious about everything. But there are times when I get upset about a lot of things, and I feel other people should be at least aware of what's going on. Maybe you don't have to bring your level of outrage up to me. You know, that's okay. I'm just a rambling, stammering guy, you know, giving out his opinion. You don't have to do it at this level. Just wake up, you know, to what's going on and what you're being fed sometime. And then I like to tell people, it's okay to shut off your brain if you want to be entertained. And then turn it back on later and say, okay, now that was kind of, you know, woo-woo-y, and I'm going to go back to work, and that's it. I'm not going to let it engross my life, you know. So that's another aspect that I think kind of throws people off when it comes to listening to me or my show or anything like that, is that, you know, here I am saying in some instances, like, I love the entertainment value that it brings, and it's okay to turn off your brain and have fun. You know, if you want to listen to Richard C. Hoagland, you know, go for it. You know, have fun with your Mission to Mars and Enterprise, whatever, and Faces on Sciatica or Cydonia or Phobos or wherever the hell that is. But, you know, then you can turn your brain back on when you're done listening to him and say, oh, that guy was full of crap. You know, because that was another dude a long time ago I thought was fairly credible. And then I started looking at stuff and said, oh, boy, what was I thinking? And it makes it more enjoyable.
Something, George.
Yeah, I want to get back to the main course of this gathering too, you know, and how I want to kind of transfer it back in or set a way to get back in. Probably about 6 years ago, 5 years ago, somewhere in that vicinity, was the enormous scandal with the Ghost Hunters show, where they did a live Halloween event. I forget the location, but it was the infamous jacket tug that went viral because Grant was walking through these catacombs, and they had both a thermal camera on him and a regular camera on him when his winter ski-looking type jacket all of a sudden gets pulled from behind. Anybody with just a common sense analytical mind could tell that it was either fishing wire or something that was connected to it. But he put on a really, really poor theatrical move that would look like he was pulled backwards, and whoa, and he'd say stuff like that, and it was, and the funny part about it is people who were posting these this video and saying, look, you know, it's faked. The supporters were still there. The fans would still be in total denial. I have no problem with that. I know you mentioned earlier that people are kind of, they'll go with the current, and they'll go with what's popular, and they'll stick to that side. Where I have a problem again, and you discussed it on your show a couple of weeks back, and I discussed it before Richard Dolan was on our show, and I discussed it when Richard Dolan was on the show, before and after he was on. But the money.
Yeah.
And this is where, Chip, it just drives me nuts. And it's not like I'm jealous that I didn't come up with this incredible scam, and that's what I want to call it. I really want to call it a scam. But I was doing the math and just trying to figure it out. Basically, this auditorium that they held this event had 7,000 seats. Now, I've heard rumors of the seat cost, the tickets, to go anywhere from $50 to $1,200. So I just spitballed it and ballparked it and said, let's say every ticket, $100. $100 for every ticket. That's $700,000. And I hear all the defense, well, it's very expensive to rent that. I don't think it's $700,000 to rent it. And then you had the pay-per-views, which were anything from $15 to $20, depending if you were in Mexico, if you were in the United States, or anywhere else in the world, that if you wanted to watch this event live on the Internet, absolutely you could watch it live if you paid the pay-per-view fee, which even if you looked at 50,000 people worldwide, which I'm sure was that, if not more. The amount of money that was collected for this presentation, which wound up presenting absolutely nothing, and we'll get to the Don Schmidt thing and the backpedaling here in a second and some other things that I've heard since then, is the bottom line of it is that there was no apology. There was no, you know, we thought it was this. We absolutely can't say that it is now. We'll refund you. Nothing like that whatsoever, Chip. They're keeping the money. They're keeping the money, and they made a killing, and they'll continue to do what they're doing.
You bet your ass they made a killing, George. And you bet your ass they ain't going to give a dime of it back to anybody. You know, there's a very good reason why it was taken to Mexico City. And listening to Don Schmidt Friday Night Talk, we got a whole lot of insight on what really goes on behind the scenes. When you were talking about the money, I know from what we were looking at and what I was cross-referencing with a lot of people in the Roswell Slide Research Group, Kurt Collins et al., and I know there's plenty more folks and with a lot bigger names than that out there. He runs a blog, Blue Blurry Lines. Say that real fast. Is a great place to check out, a great resource for a lot of this information if anybody listening out there wants to go check that out. And no, I'm not on the payroll. I just like talking about good people that do good work. So the prices of the tickets was actually converted into American $20 to $100. I think maybe $120 was the top end on that. So even if, George, you know, they came at us with a 7,000 number of attendees, and then they came at us with the 6,000 attendees. I'll give them 6,500. Okay, 6,500 at the lowest ticket price of $20 to get through the door. Strip it all away, take it down to its base, you know, and don't add any frills to anything. 6,500 times $20 netted them $130,000 in ticket sales alone at the gate. All right. When I was watching online, I did not watch it. I watched it for free. I wasn't paying for that shenanigans. I waited until Ustream popped up a feed of someone showing a screenshot of their screen and all that kind of shenanigans, right? So I got that, and when I did find that, a link to a free site for everybody to watch, you know, I spread it out on Facebook to as many groups as I could so people could come running for free, okay? That I saw a feed of actually that bought it being around 50,000 people from where I saw the portal on him saying bought it. And I know it's much higher than that. You know, we know it is. So I'm just going to, you know, like I said, I'm going to knock everything down to the bare minimums, right? And I'm even going to knock it down just to the $15 as if a bunch of people didn't buy the day of, right? So we strip down all the fancy numbers and we take 50,000 people that bought it times $15. That's 750 grand, George. This was $1 million maker. This made $1 million. All right. And that's the big, nasty, dirty secret they're not talking about. You know, and the live feed was garbage. You know, when I was watching it for free on Ustream, I saw it die plenty of times. I never even got to see Dolan's little, you know, disclosure wrap up at the end. I got to see Richard Doblay's talk, and that was the only one that was really in English, was Doblay, and Dolan was the only two that were in English, and I only got to see Doblay. I got to see, you know, the blue alien walking around like the old Ally McBeal dancing baby, you know, kind of thing. And I heard a bunch of Mexican, experts, supposedly, which I'm sure they're on the Jaime Maussan payroll and in his pocket, of course. That's probably not hard to do in Mexico to get people in your pocket for a few bucks. And one term that I did come out of there knowing a lot and hearing a lot was conclusivo scientifico. You know, and that got pounded in our brain almost every time he, you know, with the leading questions from Jaime and say, oh, this is conclusive science, right? Yeah, oh, yeah, sure. You know, so yeah, man, just 750 grand just from that feed. Mm-hmm. And my wife was telling me.
But he's being generous, though, Chip. You don't know. That's one of the things that
right.
I heard there was another one of our loyal listeners who sent me a link to the first radio broadcast that Jaime did. Of course, he did it with a lot of the Mutual Admiration Society, the part of that
right.
group, and they were all patting each other on the back and justifying everything. And one of the things he stated, he says, I am willing to give $5,000 to anybody that could come up with more of these photos. I'm willing to give $10,000 to anyone that can produce the actual mummified 2-year-old boy that is claimed in this picture. Right. And I'm like, how generous of you to give us 0.1% of what you made during this whole shenanigans, right, that you're going to try to pull this forward, which is what it's going to do. It's going to make people try to produce these through Photoshop and be able to make that $5,000 or try to search in the closest possible to those mummified remains for $10,000. It's just going to be more muddled confusion, fortune seekers that are going to try to grab attention to this scenario. And it just, again, I look at this all as some of the best con, best flim-flam artistry that I've seen in a long, long time.
Yep.
And the amount of people that are buying it is what's astounding to me.
Yeah, and, you know, let's just call it what it was. You know, he was busy out there promoting grave robbing, is what Jaime Masson was. He was actively looking for people to pay someone to go out there and get him a body. You know, and that's disgusting because I think it was the Mesa Verde Museum. I'm not sure if that is absolutely 100% correct, but I've got one of my buddies that I have these conversations with did the homework. You know, he did the backtracking on it. You know, the Million Dollar Museum, the Mesa Verde Museum, who had gotten back to him with official correspondence and said, yes, that was a Native American boy that was interned properly back in 2006, I believe it was. So at a location that's undisclosed, you know, and rightly so, because right now, if it was disclosed, jackasses that wanted to cash in on that 10 grand from Jaime Masson would be out there with a shovel right now digging it up, you know, without a care in the world about the body. And I think another thing, yeah, like you were saying, the point where, oh, well, how gracious of you to offer $5,000 and $10,000, you know, this pittance to go out there and do some dirty work, you know, and actually promote grave robbing like that when you came out of here with at least $1 million. Now, we can speculate on how that $1 million was split up and who got what upfront fees and who got a percentage of the take and all that kind of shenanigans. But, you know, there's a reason why Bryce Zabel walked away from this situation and Jaime Masson and Richard Dolan were brought in, because they were going to be, they did the job of one person. Okay, Bryce was there to do a lot of work and to help them out, but Adam Dew and Beeson, who actually owned the slides, I think his name is John Beeson, didn't want any part of that. They got scared to death when Zabel was talking about, let me put this in the hands of my people in Hollywood to see what they think. Buttholes got tight. You know, people started puckering up, you know, when that started happening. A, because they didn't want to be found out early, and B, there's gold in them there hills. Okay, they knew that they didn't want to let their golden goose out of their hands. A lot of money grabbing went on here. A lot of money grabbing. You know, it's just unbelievable to see them try to downplay it, like, you know, the National Auditorium in Mexico was this big, elaborate, prestigious place. And to me, when you're talking about the best establishment in Mexico, and this may be my first world elitist mentality, but I'm thinking probably just as good as the Marriott down the road here in Raleigh. You know, come on. You know, how wonderful could it actually be? You know, how much could it really cost? What, 10 grand for a day? 15 grand for a day?
Yeah.
Maybe? You know, come on.
Yeah.
Who we crapping here?
Yeah.
And Jaime brought in all his video equipment from his media endeavors down there in Mexico, probably told Adam, don't worry about transporting your equipment. I got equipment here. Adam said, great. I'll just come down. You record it with your feed. We'll use some of the audio. We'll use the audio and video from a documentary coming down the road. You can go ahead and make your DVD about Be Witness, and you can keep some profits off that. Cut me in on that. You know, there's all kinds of side deals in the back that we don't know about, you know, that they're not going to talk about. And, of course, everyone's going to sit and say, oh, I got a small stipend and a small honorarium and all this kind of stuff. Man, go to hell. You know, what, was I born last night? You know, come on. What, do I have stupid written on my forehead? You know, there's a reason why you travel down to Mexico. And it's to rape the land.
That's why you are who you are, and I am who I am, and Mike is who he is, because we are going to think, we're going to challenge, we're going to question. But there are those who will not. And that's the the worst part is that, can he pull this off again in another 3 to 5 years? Yes. That's, you know, there's Tracy Sparks is in there going, you know, people are going to follow regardless. They're going to follow, right. They're going to do what they're going to do, and they're in control of it. And the purpose of what we're doing, because Tracy also said, well, you know, back to talking about this from 2-3 weeks ago, because it's important. As far as I'm concerned, whether, again, it's ufology, cryptozoology, the, you know, I had a guest on probably about 3-4 months ago from the show Killing Bigfoot, and mm-hmm. I probably did, and it was, you know, the people from Destination America were kind enough to set this up and brought this guy on, and of course they've never since then invited anybody else to come on our show, because I said, well, you filmed the season already, correct? He goes, yeah. I said, well, nothing made the 6 o'clock news, so I'm gathering you never bagged one. And he went dead silent. It's the same situation with the ufology community. You're going to do a pay-per-view and an auditorium event on something that is going to blow the lid off the ufology community. It just rang bad from the beginning. And anybody who would be money smart and anybody who would be practical in mind is going to question that from the get-go and say, why? Why is it that it's set up this way? Aren't you going to share this with the entire world? Shouldn't you? After you're screaming and claiming and raising your fist in the air, we want disclosure from every government on this planet. We want disclosure. And you finally have it in the palm of your hand, supposedly, and you charge for it.
Right. Well, you know, and now all of a sudden... Right. And all of a sudden, that person that was screaming for disclosure and telling you about secret space societies and all that kind of stuff stopped asking questions. You know, just stopped. Flat out told you that in his conference call with Don and Tom and all the and Jaime and Adam, how it took hours to convince you to come along to this. In the capacity of, well, I'm just going to speak about it in terms of what disclosure means, what it means for disclosure. What? What do you mean you had to be convinced? This is, you know, like I said, this is an otherwise smart man we were led to believe for a very long time that was very legitimate, that did his due diligence. A historian, mind you, grew up in the Cold War era, studied the Cold War era, and like I told him in the only real contact that we've ever had with each other when... On Facebook, on the UFO Updates Facebook page there, I said, you mean to tell me a historian from the Cold War era with that specialization in his studies forgot the adage from Ronald Reagan, trust but verify? I don't buy it. Not for one stinking bit. What I do buy is plausible deniability that was built in. I do buy that, and that's something I discussed, you know, last night with my wife, who brought that in, and how that's a very real PR marketing type situation that people build for themselves throughout the years. And he has built that up, that's for sure, especially in leading up to Cinco de Mayo there, where he actually went down and he says, "Oh, I found the slides in there." Or I got to look at the slides, and they're very compelling and all this stuff. Well, you know, at first he went out and tried to tell you that he didn't get a look at nothing before he went down to Cinco de Mayo. And I thought, well, that doesn't jive for me, you know, because, like I said, you're just going to go down there on someone's word, and you're supposed to still be this, you know, investigator and researcher and supposed to have credibility after this, you know, but yet you were more than willing to let yourself get fooled. So there's... You know, there's the flag, is that, you know, maybe in the end he actually didn't see the slides, but it still comes down to the decision you have to make about his role in this. Was he a willing participant?
Well, it makes you the greater,
right.
It makes you the greater fool. It's ludicrous to stake your reputation and say, I'll jump in with both feet into the deep end, sure, because I trust you, and I'll trust my reputation with you. And not see the evidence, it's not plausible.
Did I not do my homework, and was I ignorant, or am I lying to you? You know, one of the two, and neither of them are good. So pick one.
Yeah, but Chip, it's plausible deniability along with profitability.
Right, You know, and that's another thing my wife mentioned last night, who used to do the show years ago and was skeptical, a lot like Mike was saying he was, or he is, except I put her in the law along the lines of a denialist. You know, it's like on that same Facebook page, UFO Updates, there's a guy, Ryan, on there that was talking about pseudo skeptics and debunkers and all that kind of stuff. And I said, no, you really kind of have to define these things, because there is such a thing as a denialist out there that, in the face of all the events and all the evidence and even being there firsthand, they still won't believe it. You know, so you got to have a denialist category, in my opinion. You can have a pseudo skeptic category, which means somebody who is kind of a skeptic and pretending to be a skeptic, but really they're kind of dumb in the way they go about it, I guess, for lack of a better term. And then you could have the actual skeptic. You know, there's just many subtle levels of skepticism here, and none of it needs to come with a derogatory term, really, in when it comes down to it. So, yeah, it's like she was telling me, she basically visualized it, so I'm going to have everybody at home listening. Go ahead and take your right hand and put it over both your eyes, and then take your left hand and lay it flat and then hold it out. And that's pretty much what you're going to see what Richard Dolan did here in this instance. He had his hand out for the money and then covered up his eyes. And, you know, if you had another pair of arms, you could plug your ears and go la, 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 you know, and away we go. So, and none of that, again, is leading to being or really helping him out in any way, shape, or form claim that he's a credible investigator in any way. So, yeah.
It begs the question again is, you know, how long will this continue? And that is a very broad, sweeping question, and I want to give you a moment to ponder that before you give an answer, because it's an important one. When we're talking about the fact that more than likely, out of this debacle, is what I really consider it to be, whether it was of intent or incompetence, it's a debacle. And they will still press forward with their books about this event, about the slides, and they will still capitalize on a con. And how long does this continue? Is it, I mean, no matter how much you speak about it on your show, we speak about it on our show, we speak about it in the community, is there a way to shut this down from continuing? Or is it always going to be a fool in the money or soon parted, and it will stay that way?
Shut it down. See that? Yeah, that's the thing, too. That's the other... Yes, I would love to see every snake oil salesman that's come into town on their wagon giving you the cure for all your ills run out on a rail or beaten in the town square. Okay? Yes, I would love to have that kind of thing. But on the other end of the spectrum, there is that entertainment value that needs to come along with it. So, and there's also the other angle is that I'm not looking to ruin anyone's source of income. You know, like you said, if there are fools with a handful of cash that are willing to throw it at these folks, go for it. It's your money. Do what you want. You're losing it, pal. You know, it's like with that whole event, I went out there to find a free venue to look at these things. There's ways to get at this stuff, folks. You know, if you're interested in the paranormal or the UFO genre at all, I suggest you go online, start up your own Facebook page, start up your own Tumblr, and become a blogger, okay? And now when one of these little shows come to your town, when they run, you know, when P.T. Barnum comes to town with his circus, and they come close to you, you contact those folks and say, hey, I'm a blogger, and I'd like to report about your little happening going on over here. Wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, you just got in for free. Okay? It's that simple. Because they love promotion, and they love to be loved, you know, and be made to feel important. You know, the only people that I really can't stand, and I really think should be out of business, are people that like prey on the elderly and the sick. You know, the fake health advice people. You know, the Ty Bollingers of the world trying to sell you Carnivora. You know, and every time George Norrie has him, or George Snorrie, whichever you'd like to call him, has him on Coast to Coast and selling that garbage, I really get upset, you know, because I had a mother that died of MS complications. Of course, nobody dies of MS itself. It's always some other illness that gets a hold of your ass and brings you down. So, as with most other diseases, right, you end up dying of a simple cold, or you end up getting pneumonia, or in her case, you ended up getting sepsis. And was on so many damn painkillers, didn't know what the hell was going on in her until it was way too late, of course. So, you know, it's those kind of things that piss me off when they come out here. You know, I get really mad, you know, like violently pissed off, okay? Like I want to do things to you if you're one of these people that are out there trying to tell people they don't need to see a real doctor, you know, that taking this herb or taking this, you know, ginkgo glaucoma or glaucoma or whatever the hell it is, I don't take it. You know, I did a long time ago until I figured out it was just a waste of time. And, you know, like I said, back when I was naive, you know, those are the real baddies out there that I think that should be stopped and need to be stopped. You know, the ones that are, you know, actually physically harming people with their ignorance. With this genre, with the UFO and paranormal end of it, you know, they've always got the out of, you know, I always sat on the fence, and that's Dolan's game. You know, he, as one of my friends like to call it, word salad is his game. You know, just say a bunch of words that don't mean anything, but sound smart, and by the time you got done, you end up saying, what the hell just happened? And he's already out the door, you know, so... yeah, there's a lot of, like, if when I go back and I listen to a lot of these folks and in their conversations and their interviews, and I listen to it with a critical mind, and I implore everybody that listens, you know, whether it be on Dead Air Paranormal or Mind Cemetery, go ahead, get out there. Don't take my word for anything. Call me a rambling rectum all you want. Tell me I don't know what I'm talking about. Tell me I have an agenda, whatever. Go listen to some of these shows and watch how fast it takes them to talk themselves in a circle and directly contradict themselves within minutes. You know, it won't take long, I'll tell you that much. But for the ones that I really despise, like those health people, really piss me off big time, you know, because they do actual damage out there, and that's just a, you know, just the lowest form of, you know, you son of a, you know, no patience, man. I got no patience for those folks, and nobody should, because they actually do harm to family members and people you love, and for people that actually have family members that were afflicted with real badass problems like cancer or MS or AIDS or HIV or any, you know, one of the real badasses out there, or autism is another good one. The anti-vaxxers against autism, man. I just, you know, these SOBs are just setting up the population for a super bug to come in here and make everything that was, all the progress through science that was achieved, eradicated, you know, and they don't get it, you know, and a lot of these anti-vaxxing Hollywood types are idiots, you know. One of them comes up to mind because I'm a Bears fan is Jay Cutler's wife, Kristen Cavallari, who came to notoriety doing some The Hills thing on MTV, right? Barely graduated high school, yet now she's some sort of authority on how to eat right, live right, and vaccines are going to kill you and your baby and give you autism. No, there's a lot of other factors that give babies autism, first of all. And second of all, we're better at diagnosing problems. That's why you see rates going up, all right? It's not because of the mercury in the vaccines, because believe me, 5 years ago when I had my son, our firstborn here, I've got two now. So I thought the same thing. I was that nut job in the locker room, in the doctor's office, reading the things, and the doctor's like, yeah, you're looking for this, this, and this, and it ain't there. See, and he's pointing it for me. I'm like, oh, okay. And that's when I woke up. It's like, have a kid on your own now, and look at what you're actually getting in these vaccines before you go all woo-woo that they're here to get you, you know? So, or infect you with a nanotech bot or something, like, you know, just really nutso stuff out there. And that's the dangerous stuff. Those are the people that really need to be stopped. The other shenanigans, I equate it to pro wrestling. And I always have kind of equated it all to pro wrestling, because I'd see these you know, these big names going at it with each other, and yet they'd show up at the same conferences. And that's when it kind of triggered a long time ago that it was really, you know, just a charade and just a put on to get people to show up and tune in and all that kind of. So yeah, in the hierarchy of people that need to be shut down, I think the vaxxers and the health people need to be shut down a lot sooner than these woo-woo purveyors and all these people, because a lot of the times these are folks more than willing to be fooled, you know?
Well, that's, you know, and it comes back to it again. And for those of you that are just joining us, we are simulcasting with our guest tonight, Chip Flesher. And, of course, we are the guests of Chip's also on Mind Cemetery, George Lopez and Mr. Michael Bowler. And Mike has a couple of questions. He wants to change the direction here in just a second. But, you know, it comes to mind constantly, Chip, you know, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me. And I wonder how much of the community will bite if in a year, 2 years, 5 years, Jaime Rosan and this community decide, and maybe he won't put his name on top because he's a very, very shrewd and smart businessman. He'll put somebody else's name on top and set up another scenario similar to this again. How many people will bite once more?
With Jaime, let's go back to the slides here, shenanigans. And I'm sorry, Mike, to put you back on ice again. But there was a reason that it was taken south of the border, you know, and I like to talk about the early days of this whole slide group over there.
Before you go into it, I'm going to add one part to it because I want you to address it just after this entire event had gone on, and the first time Jaime was speaking once again. He, and I don't remember the lady that came on this gentleman's show, but they both started screaming counterintelligence about the placard that was on the Petri that the body was on, that it was counterintelligence, it was the government that faked that placard, that put that placard there. And the other theory was it was a softer way to introduce the public to an alien carcass, so to see how their reaction would be before telling them it was a true alien. So I love these twists and turns that they're coming up with just to, again, try to cover their collective asses. That being said, sir, continue.
Yeah. Oh, that was Linda Moulton Howe and her escapade on Unknown Country with Whitley Strieber and Jaime. Yeah, that's a 45-minute long fun fest right there to listen to. And of course the Emmy winning, ever accomplished and ever astute investigative journalist Linda Moulton Howe, man, stick it. You take that down the road, lady. You know, you old bag, take a seat. You know, the same thing with Paola Harris. Take a walk, lady. Get out of here. This, you know, Paola Harris wants to sit and tell you how much she was a student of J. Allen Hynek. She was a secretary translating things from English to Italian and grabbing coffee. Have a seat, and number one. Number two, at least try to spell the man's name right, for God's sakes. It's not H-Y-N-E-C-K, okay? It's not like the neck on a human or anything else, all right, lady? Have a seat. I just can't stand that woman. She's just one of the worst. But, you know, she has her agenda, too, and she's busy selling her own symposiums, and everybody's got to be a friend, and everybody's wonderful, of course. So in the early days of all this, hopefully you guys had heard that when it was first presented a couple years ago, they actually went to Nick Redfern first and said, how much do you think these slides are worth? And Nick said, well, I don't know what the hell you're talking about. You know, I don't think they're worth nothing. You know, this is a mummy and adios, and that's all it heard. Well, then they decided to take them due in this Beeson character who found them, who was the brother of the woman that had them, actually, this John Beeson. And that's something that doesn't get out there a lot. It actually took them to due, who was a kind of a sports journalist producer out of Chicago, you know. And when this all first creeped up, I tried to contact him almost immediately when I heard all this stuff, and I heard his connection to Chicago sports. I do a Chicago Stupid podcast. I thought, hey, buddy, you know, what do you know, let's shoot the breeze a little bit. Crickets, okay? Because I'm not a big enough voice. That's why I got crickets, folks. Then, after that was done, that's when they brought in Carrie and Schmidt, who were on the Roswell train, you know, which, as of course, if you haven't heard of this yet, they Don Schmidt is trying to claim that he never attached the Roswell moniker to this and did all he could to separate this from Roswell. Man, stick it again. Who are you crapping? You know, who are you lying to? You know, but the problem is that when they go out there and they say these things, it's always on a podcast or it's at a speaking engagement, so it doesn't hit the wide audience. So they really, you know, again, it plays back to the accountability aspect of everything. They really have no accountability because the audience they get is like a niche of a niche, and, you know, they can play people against each other easily, and they can play stupid people against each other easily. They can play stupid people's emotions against each other easily. You know, that's an old timeless classic right there. But then, you know, when they got together with Du, Carey, and Schmidt, got together with Beeson and said, okay, how can we sell this? Well, they tried to sell it to all these labs in the U.S., and everybody told them to take a hike. All these universities told them to take a hike. It's a mummy. You know, don't bother us. And then all of a sudden, you know, here introduced Bryce Zabel to the whole equation because he had two things that they wanted. They wanted a disclosure angle to get a bigger, you know, to cast a bigger net to get people in, and they also wanted help with promotions. And that's where he tried to get them to produce the actual slides and the actual pictures, scan pictures and all that kind of stuff to Bryce, tried to get that out of him so he could present it to his contacts in L.A. And then when Bryce wasn't hearing everything he wanted to hear and he kept hearing things like, oh, we're going to have a press conference to talk about the press conference, to talk about Be Witness, and then talk about the documentary, he said, you guys are crazy, first of all. You know, this is not how you roll anything out. And I don't want anything to do with this anymore, you know. So he came to his senses, and I think it was more, not only did he come to his senses, but I think Bryce realized that he didn't want to burn up his contacts in L.A. because he's an accomplished actual screenwriter and author in his own right, you know, and actually has a brain, you know. But he was in with Dolan with After Disclosure. So then they went on to the next best thing. They went on for Richard Dolan and then enter Jaime Maussan. And again, Friday night, Don Schmidt on Jimmy Church's show, who had a bunch of Contact in the Desert people on there, in the first, you know, from 15 minutes in to 30 minutes in was Don Schmidt's interview, if you want to catch that. I think it's episode 262. I got it pulled up here, a Fade to Black, and I usually don't like plugging other people's shows, but in the interest of everyone knowing where the hell I'm getting this information, you can find it yourself for free out there. You can find it on Spreaker, that is. Okay, so enough of that. He went on to say that he felt like he was doing the Roswell Museum a favor by not introducing this whole thing to it and taking it south of the border. And I was like, what? What do you mean you were doing them a favor by not putting it in there? Because the first thing I said is, why the hell are you having a Roswell slide reveal down in Mexico City? You know, that sounds about, you know, exporting jobs to me. You know, we could have used that little bump in the local economy for Roswell and all that kind of stuff. Well, we didn't want to do it just in case anything went wrong. What do you mean in case something went wrong? Remember, you had definitive conclusivo scientifico going here. You know, and now all of a sudden I'm worried about somebody looking bad. You know, when did you get a conscience here? When did Jiminy Cricket showed up on your shoulder? You know, it's just ridiculous. So enter in Jaime Maussan and his ability to take this to Mexico City, which, you know, let's face it, the fan base doesn't have a TV, probably doesn't have the internet, and will be willing to pay a ticket to show up for this kind of thing and see it in person. So they get nothing, you know, no background information, and they're very susceptible to woo-woo anyway, and they also like to be entertained, just like I said, when P.T. Barnum comes to town, and you don't have TV, and you don't have the internet, and all you got is a radio saying Ringo, 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 you know, on there, and Singo, 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 and all that kind of, okay, fine, I'll show up, I got nothing to do this afternoon, you know, but, you know, so it's, I'll take over, I'll promote it in Mexico. I've got my idiot fan base all ready to rock. Mexico City's huge. You know, it's what, one of the largest on the planet city-wise. And I can get people to fill this, you know, 10,000 seat, you know, national auditorium. So, you know, he used all that gravitas he has there in Central America and Mexico to pull people in. And it went on like gangbusters. You know, they, like I said, they pulled in two people to do the job of one, and neither of those people had a little Jiminy Cricket on their shoulder to tell them you're nuts and stop doing this and this isn't going to end well.
Not to mention the fact that if they did put this on here in the States and 4 days later, a group of Roswell investigators divulged the placard stating that it is the mummified remains of a two-year-old boy, you better believe a good portion of that audience who paid anywhere from $50 to $1,200 would be lawyering up immediately and asking for refunds.
Correct. And that, yeah, that's the other aspect out of it all, is that dude and everybody said, well, hot diggity dog damn, now we're going to make it 10 times harder for anybody to come at us legally for fraud. You know, isn't that convenient?
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, that was
well
just a hell of a scam. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It was well thought out. It was masterfully done. And and they're no worse for the wear. They're actually better off financially in what they did. And again, those particular ones that are going to be the supporters that are going to say it's counterintelligence, it's disinformation by the government, they're stepping in, they created this entire scenario, even to go as far as to say they put those pictures out there to mess with the entire community, to taunt the community, to make the community look bad. That was all done by the government. I mean, I just love one story after another as far as that's concerned.
Right, and that was all facilitated by Dew, who, you know, like the next day said, oh, the Roswell Research Group is hoaxing this, and they photoshopped in the blurriness that they deblurred and all this other stuff. When I talk about my wife and her aspects and the PR angle and the plausible deniability and all that kind of stuff, my wife is a digital marketing guru in her own right, you know, for a very long time. She's been doing that. Worked in her own marketing agency, or worked for a marketing agency here in Raleigh, started her own agency here at home, worked for SAS, worked for IBM, and is doing work for IBM now. So, you know, it's not like I've got Joe Blow the Rag Man to consult with about things like images and image analysis. And when I popped all this stuff up and was telling her the programs they use, she was actually, when she hears people talk about DeBlur and Adobe and all that kind of stuff, she's like laughing out loud when I had this stuff playing. She's like, obviously these people don't know what the hell they're talking about, you know, and all this stuff. So it's funny to get someone who actually is in the business and marketing and all that kind of stuff, and digital marketing more specifically, which I mentioned in other places, that for the first time in history this last year, more money is being dumped into digital marketing, which is online marketing for everybody else at home, than there was on TV advertising. And that's the first time that's happened since TV was introduced. So, you know, the last time that kind of jump happened was when TV was introduced versus radio. So TV's going the way of the dodo here.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was going to say. It really is. I have a caller in the queue here, Chip, and I'm going to preface this following conversation with the fact that I will and need to play the arbitrator. Our caller, of course, is the host of our Tuesday night show that I co-host with on Tuesday nights, A World Awakening. She is the author of the trilogy, House of Darkness, House of Light, Volumes 1, 2, and 3, and is the eldest daughter of the family that the movie The Conjuring was based upon. That being said, let the games begin. Andrea Perrin, welcome to Primetime Paranormal. You had some questions for Chip.
Hi, George. I know I'm a night early and a dollar short. But I've been listening to the show right from the inception. Hi, Chip. It's nice to meet you in cyberspace.
Hello. Yes.
I've been listening right from the start, and I'm thrilled actually to hear that you had started having experiences, paranormal experiences, as a youngster. And I find that my first experience with multidimensional creatures, put it to you that way, multidimensional beings, started when I was 12. I had my first UFO experience that I recall at the age of 13. And I find that many, many people that I've encountered during the course of my lectures and my travels say the same thing, you know, that it began that their fascination was almost plugged into them, that everything changed when they began seeing such incredible visions in front of them. And subsequently, over the course of years, I have had numerous experiences, not only in the 10 years that I lived at the farm with my family, that the film The Conjuring was so loosely based on. It's just a piece of fiction. Please ignore it. But anyway,
okay.
The thing that I'm concerned about, the thing that makes me, compelled me to call in, is that you, in the process of describing what you think was the scenario of how things went down leading up to the Mexico City, for all intents and purposes, debacle, it just sounded, my concerns are twofold. That you're telling people that this one said this and that one said that, and I don't know if you're putting words into their mouths, if you know all of these people, if you've had first-hand conversations with them, or if this is just the unfolding wave that's coming out of this very disappointing and unfortunate event. And also, I found some of the comments that you made about people in the community to be disparaging in generalizations, you know, calling people foolish. Because, you know, I'm no fool. I'm a 56-year-old woman who's very accomplished in her own right. And I am reserving judgment in terms of some aspects of this. Do I think that this was a money-making proposition? Yes, I do. George has done the math. You've done the math. A number of people have done the math on this. And, you know, there were people that walked away from this with their pockets padded. There's no question about that. But I want you to just be thoughtful and careful in your remarks if you're putting actual words in people's mouths, because that can be very hurtful. And I want you to understand that, you know, because I supported Jaime Masson prior to this event, I put it out all over the internet, every far as and wide as my reach would go. I had every hope that this would be a breakthrough event in the community, that this would be an enlightening moment for humanity. That's where my heart and my mind was. George knows it like he knows his own name. We did a live simulcast with me monitoring.
Andrea, just before you continue, readjust where you're at, because you're cutting in and out a little bit, honey.
Okay. I'll just move away from the computer. I have electrical issues. All my all the chat room knows it too. So, you know, I met him. I met him last November. I spent a couple of hours with him. My sense of him was that he was an authentic person in search of answers, in search of truth. You know, for me to just out of hand dismiss everything that happened and everyone's involvement in this as a setup, as a money-making proposition, I'm just not that cynical, but that doesn't make me stupid. I choose to reserve judgment. My sense, my visceral sense about this chick is that there are things that we don't know yet about what happened and who's involved and who made money and who's telling the truth and who's lying. But I cannot simply out of hand dismiss Jaime Masson as a criminal money maker, as a liar, as a thief, as a scoundrel. I can't do that. I need more information. And so because of that, I haven't been quiet because I've gone away with my tail between my legs. I have been thoughtful and diligent in keeping up with everything that's happening around this through my people, through the people that I know in the community. And, you know, that doesn't mean that everybody's right about everything either. But I also thought that it was rather disingenuous of Richard Dolan to just, you know, be so willing to dismiss something this massive as a simple mistake. I don't buy into that at all. I don't think that that's a fair characterization any more than it is a fair characterization to call Jaime Massan a liar and a thief. I think that we need to be thoughtful and diligent about how we approach this. We need to be mature. We need to be careful around this because these are people's reputations on the line. And when we lump people into huge categories of these people are all liars and these people are all stupid and these people are all sheep, we do a disservice to all of humanity. And so that's really all I called in to say. And I thank you for being on the show tonight. Mike and George do an excellent job with Primetime Paranormal every week. And I'm very happy to be associated with this network. You know, this is a Dead Air is a great venue. And I hope that you will accept my invitation to come on to a World Awakening with George and myself sometime in the future when we've seen some of this pan out and see what the ramifications of it are down the road.
You got it. Thank you. I don't know. Did you want to stick around for my answer or any or my commentary,
oh,
I guess?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know if you were just hanging up afterwards. Okay.
No.
Good.
No,
because
no,
it, yeah, it's much more than just a.
It's not the other way around.
Well, you know, you got to keep the peace sometimes. So that's what I told George. You know, I understand that aspect of the relationship there. So, when it comes to, you know, I think we're in agreement with.
Tell me if I misunderstood what your intentions were, Chip. I don't want to, you know, falsely accuse you of anything either, honey.
No, it's okay. Don't worry. My feelers aren't, you know, easily stomped on. So it's okay. Don't worry. Just say what you want. Say what you feel. Okay. When it comes to Dolan, we're both in the same boat on that aspect with, you know, how could someone so willfully, go along with this kind of thing? You know, just, and throw it all away, kind of their sense and sensibility. You know, that's for us, both of us. We're on the same boat with that. You know, we both agree that
was
a huge...
I don't understand. You know, Rich, I don't understand why Richard didn't do, you know, what they call due diligence.
Right.
Around this prior to associating himself with it.
Correct.
I don't understand that. And, you know, I would like to have the opportunity to ask him that at some point. But a couple of weeks ago, I was playing referee. And I just, you know, that question came and went right out of my mind.
Right. Well, yeah, that happens a lot of times when you get people in front of you and everything gets heated. You know, you forget all the good stuff, right?
It gets muddled.
So we're on the same boat with that aspect in the whole situation there and the red flags that does cause. And it's like I told George earlier in a mantra that Reagan had, trust but verified was lost on a man that was a historian during the Cold War era. I just don't buy it, you know. We're going to have a huge departure on our opinions of Jaime Massan, unfortunately. There is a website out there with over 40 frauds that he's been associated with. The two that come to mind for me that were backbreakers of, you know, the camel's back, so to speak. The Dr. Reed alien in the fridge, if you're familiar with that story, and the picture of the rat looking like alien that was caught in a trap in a Mexican shack and the guy put it in some bleach and some ammonia and it looked all, you know, petrified and all this kind of stuff, and he pawned that off as an alien too. And you know, those two cases stand out to me when I think Jaime Massan. And when he immediately got tacked onto this, I knew that it was circus sideshow ticket sale time. So that's where our massive departure on Jaime Massan. I mean, I don't understand how people can come out and say he's a credible person or that he has no money-making bone in his body or anything like that. You know, he's right up there with the Cousins brothers of third phase. You know, I mean, they're blatantly out there just putting whatever they can for YouTube hits, and Jaime's kind of doing the same thing, you know. So, you know, that I have to disagree with. And anybody that I hear come out and say, you know, that they think he's credible, I just think, you know, what? Just Google it, you know. And it's okay to come out and call a man a hoaxer and a fraud who's a hoaxer and a fraud, you know, in my opinion. And It doesn't have to be mine. And the part where you probably feel that I'm calling people stupid, and I probably have called them stupid, is the fact that, you know, I go back to the part where it's okay to flip the switch in your brain and turn off logic to be entertained and then turn it back on when the hour or two's over. Okay, you don't have to be stuck on dumb, you know, and stuck on Yaha time. And, you know, you got to know when to be entertained and when not to. And maybe that's more over the sociological condition of the genre's fan base, is that they have a hard time flipping that switch, so to speak, to borrow some sport terminology. And I know it probably doesn't translate well, but some people it will. So maybe that helps clarify some things, or maybe muddies it some more for you. I don't know.
I think that a lot of what we address and what we've addressed tonight, what we've addressed over the last couple of weeks, again, is now at least to an extent, Chip, it's an awareness. It's got some people out there who may think, who may do some additional research, who may look into it further. Again, if it's, as we've used on the show so many times before, on A World Awakening, a pebble in the pond, a small ripple to start with, but at least it's got some momentum and some energy to it, so that when these situations come up, and it is a money-making venture, that people will take pause. They will take a different look and approach to it and say, wait, before I invest in this event, before I invest in this individual, I'm gonna check this out first. You know, or as you said, you know, there are other ways to route around the contribution that thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands are making and contributing to these individuals who are just standing on a pile of money and laughing to those below them who are just so hopeful. I mean, there are dreamers in this community. We need the dreamers in this community. That's what keeps it moving forward. Those who are in the spirit phenomena section, those who are in the cryptozoology section, those who are in the ufology section, those people who would love to see the absolutes in those fields as far as contact and evidence provided. But when it is muddled, no different than those things that you see on YouTube, where people who are masterfully creating these films that look so legitimate, and people sit there and they know right off the bat, anybody who's got just at least an inkling of an idea looks at the background of the person who posted it and finds out that they're in film school, they're in production school, they've got the software. A majority of the other videos that are on their YouTube page have nothing to do with the UFO capture, that this was just a neat little experiment, and you know, to look a little further into it and not just buy into the entire idea. And that calls for it in every aspect of this field. So with that discussion being as it was, before I turn it over to Mike again, too, for it, I wanted to make sure that, again, Andrea, we lost her. She's back again. So that's why
that was on my end. I shorted out my phone. You know how I do.
No problem.
Yeah, that's okay. But did you have anything follow up with Chip as far as that's concerned before I give it to Mike?
No, you know me. I keep it cordial, and there's no reason for it to be anything other than cordial. I just want to see in the community at large, I want to see the hyperbole ramped down, and I want to see the research ramped up. Because as I just posted in the chat room, I'm not a dreamer. I'm a believer because I'm a knower. And because I know what I know, I feel absolutely certain that we will have full disclosure. I know that we will. I know it. But I don't think it's going to come directly from the federal government. I think that they're going to have to wait until they're at the 11th and a half hour and mm-hmm. their hands are tied and they're pushed up against a wall and yep. there's nothing more they can do but tell the truth.
I think 100% agree with you on that.
A disclosure is coming from me and from myriad other people around this planet who have had close encounters that are absolutely undeniable, that are beautiful, that are loving, and that are very, very important for the evolution of our species and possibly even the salvation of our race. And I take all of this damn seriously. I do. And if Jaime Maussan, in the final analysis, turns out to be a scoundrel and a thief, I will be the first one calling him on the carpet, calling him out. I will, because that's what my character is made of. And I think that it's very important not, you know, to ramp down the hyperbole and not to impugn the character of mass people. That's really my only objection to the discourse tonight, and I thank you for taking time to talk to me.
No problem. Thanks for calling in. I'm glad you had the chance to call in and get something in and get a question in on me and get a few statements in, because I'd expected that, hopefully, you know, and I hope for that, because you're a voice on this network here on Dead Air Paranormal that is definitely beloved and needed to be heard from.
Thank you, and you are welcome to join us on A World Awakening anytime.
Thank you.
Hi, Mike. Talk
hey there.
To you guys later. I will.
Yep.
I'll be listening into the rest of the show. You have a good
cool.
evening. Okay. Bye bye.
The only thing that I did miss out on in telling Andrea and where I got my information, where I get everything, I spend a lot of my time wasting my time listening to other shows who have the guests on that wouldn't come near me with a 10-foot pole, you know, because of the way I have talked about everything. So, you know, I go, you know, I search the myriad of shows. You know, I'm going Don Ecker, I'm going Radio Mysterio, you know, I'm going where the Roswell Slide Research Group has gone out and talked, and I'm starting to get the idea that the Raleigh Research Group, I keep calling it that because I'm in Raleigh, the Roswell Research Group, isn't stumping hard enough, I don't think. You know, they did their job and
yeah.
did a hell of a job at doing it, but, you know, the way they've retracted behind the scenes, you know, they should be more out front, but hey, that's them and that's what they want to do, then fine. You know, they had momentum, they could have kept it and they could keep pounding it because, you know, like I've said, you know, most of my research is coming from what I see them post on Facebook or what I have, you know, people send me on Facebook saying, hey, come look at this, because a lot of the times I can't go look at that for, like I said, the reasons of what I've said, they've managed to block me from it, but I've got people out there that help gather information for me and help keep me up to date, thank God, and put me in check too, you know, behind the scenes and all that kind of stuff, and tell me, hey, you know, you're an idiot here and there, and that's kind of what I like, and hopefully I foster that kind of environment that I'm not above reproach. You know, I'm not going to sit here and call and tell George, you know, hey, I'm not going to hold your hand like you're in kindergarten. You know, he had a chance. He had 2 hours to explain it to you, yet all of a sudden he didn't want to explain anything to you. So that kind of peed me off about that whole thing too. So I go out there and I listen to the shows that like Don Schmidt are doing. I listen to all the shows that Dolan was doing. You know, I went out and listened to the recordings. I recorded some of the shows myself. You know, I've got a ton of cuts and clips that I chopped up that, like I said, you just stick around, they're going to contradict themselves real quick. And nowhere in between will there be too much logic, you know. So, sorry to jump in there on that. And I know we got to get to Mike because he's been sitting on ice for too damn long. So, Mike, go ahead and fire away, I guess.
The reason why we got to give Mike that airtime too is he's a little bit miffed right now since the Supreme Court sided with the Muslim woman who needed a job at Abercrombie and Fitch. There's going to be a new clothing requirement at Hooters, and he's a little upset about that. But Mike, go ahead.
What?
That's for what's on Mike's finance next week.
Nice.
Chip, you know, I'm just sitting here listening, and I appreciate you. Thinking of me, this is normally what I tend to do on these shows now. And I'll get to that in a minute. I want to ask you a question up front, if it's okay.
Yeah.
What are your religious beliefs, if you have any?
I was born, I guess, just Christian. I grew up in Chesterton, Indiana, at the First Christian Church, baptized, full immersion. You know, I'm raising my kids Catholic because that's what the wife is. You know, so. You know, I've got them going to Catholic schools here in Raleigh, and I love them very much, and they do very good things for him. So we're very happy with that right now. Although I know the pitfalls that the Catholic Church has, Yeah, in my religious bringing, it was me and my mom going to church all the time. My dad's side was Catholic out of Chicago, so every once in a while I let the Chicago accent slide out of me here, but it's kind of wearing away now that I'm down here in Raleigh. So, I've got the background there. I've got uncles that were ministers and very religious aspects of the family there in that end. So I'm not exactly, I'm not a total heathen out here, in the woods.
Right. Yeah, I'm agnostic, just to let you know where I was going with that. That sometimes I wonder how much that influences somebody in their part in the community. And where I want to go with this is that with the skepticism that I've had over the past, couple of years, I've been with George 3 years now, I find myself a lot of nights with guests like yourself sitting back and listening and not being as much a part of the conversation as I used to be, simply
right.
Due to lack of belief. And having somebody like yourself on is refreshing. But as I'm listening tonight and I listen to Andrea come on and you guys agreeing to disagree and it's good discussion, are we starting to focus this community? And could we have a turnaround where we have more people that are skeptical like you and I? But that's not necessarily a good turn for the community, because what we've done is that, we're fixing to go into a presidential election here in the United States, and what we see is we see two sides of the table.
Right.
They're constantly arguing about who's right and who's not, and there's nothing getting done. And that's what kind of came to mind tonight when I listened to everyone. Not that you're not doing a great job with what's going on, and not that Andrea doesn't do a great job in George, but we're not getting anything accomplished in this community.
Right.
This community
right.
simply sits around and argues over who's right and who's a fraud and who's this and that. It's been so long since I've been on this show that we've actually talked about something that had to do with paranormal research that mattered, that I come to you now and ask you, what are your actual beliefs in the community, and what is it that brings you to the community? Do you believe there's something out there in outer space? Do you believe in Bigfoot? Do you believe in life after death? I personally don't believe that once we die, we simply turn invisible. As I say
right.
to many people, that I'm not sure that we pass on the way we think that, the people in the spirit community do. So if you could kind of share with us a little bit about what your actual beliefs are in the paranormal
right.
and not so much about what everybody else has told you that you don't believe.
Right. Okay. So you brought up some fantastic points. Are we tilting at a windmill? Here, basically, as Don Quixote would do. No, I don't think we're tilting at a windmill, because I think there is a niche inside of this genre that loves to hear this kind of straight talk about people, that is tired of being told everybody's a friend and everybody's good when they're not. Okay. There's another resource out there that's good for people, and it's UFOWatchdog.com. Check that out. It ain't been updated for years, but it has a hall of fame and a hall of shame and all the dirt that people need to know about various characters and players in the field. There is a need out there for this kind of thing, but it's like they don't know it. You know what I mean? And it's always harder to turn a tide than it is to get a tide rolling. Okay, it's always going to be twice as hard to get your message out in contradiction to what's been established for a very long time, because people are safe and they feel good about themselves and they feel like they belong to these stories and these big names and these people. They're comfortable with them. And when someone like Chip Plesher comes along with their cold pricklies and his pointing finger and his stink eye gaze and all that kind of stuff, well, that turns a lot of people off. And I've come to the realization with my show on the Mind Cemetery, I'm fine with turning people off. Because if, like I said, if you're not willing to disseminate or discern between what is entertainment and what is fact and what is fiction and what's fun and what's serious, then maybe I don't need you anyway. Maybe we don't need you as a fan.
Not to cut you off there, I understand where you're going, and I completely agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
But what pulls you into this community to start out with? In other words, what
yeah.
I'm saying here is
right.
that I could sit here, but the show is not about me. I don't want to go into my beliefs. George right. and I have discussed it. Hopefully we can have you back on here with us on Monday one night, and we'll mm-hmm. get into near-death experiences, some of the residual energy, some of the genetic
yeah.
memory theories that I have and things like that, that I think is part of the paranormal community that we're not focusing on, that we need to if we really wanted to discover. And I think that the community doesn't want to discover that the majority of the community, and I'm not knocking you here, wants to belittle one another and be self-promoting within themselves.
Right.
And instead of doing the research we need to be doing. So my thought would be, once you got away from the radio, once you got away from the microphone, what part of the community really gets you going?
That's hard. You know, that's a hard one to get excited anymore. You know, once you've been in and interviewed a lot of people and seen what's out there and who's greasy and who is it, and, you know, in your own mind, at least once you've decided on your own, who you think is and isn't worth your attention. The people that still get me juiced to it, as the Rolling Stones say, and I know they're on tour now, so at least they're creaking along on tour. Peter Robbins and Larry Warren, with the Rendlesham case. I still get juiced to that story, and I still think that there's two people right there that you can take to the bank. And, you know, it's like I say with a lot of people that I say you can take to the bank. You know, at any time somebody wants to hand me something that says they're full of crap, do it, you know, and bring it, document it and bring it to me, and I'll reevaluate my position, you know. So
Is there any personal beliefs that you have? And I understand
I'll get to the
prepared. What about your personal thoughts or personal theories on and let's start with the spirit world.
Spirit world, yes. I do believe in an afterlife. I can't explain why some people's spirits seem to stick around and others pass on. You know, I don't really want to believe all the way into this unfinished business excuse, you know, of people being around, because when I had my experience, it was with a great grandfather that I hadn't seen in years, and he was, it was really weird, man. He was looking at, I'm at home watching TV, this is the Crib Notes version of it, watching TV, laying on the ground, you know, elbows on the ground, head propped up, you know, laying down, and probably like 10, 11, 12, watching cartoons or whatever the hell was on TV at the time, after school, and I know it was before I was into football, so it was before, like, freshman year, you know, or no, actually it had to be before seventh grade, yeah, and I graduated in 95, so I'm 37 now, going to be 38 in July, you know, live with it. I saw a full body apparition, and the best way that I could describe it is a blue glowy force ghost kind of thing from Star Wars, and that's how I describe it now, because when I watch it, I'm like, man, that's how clear as day the damn thing was, except it wasn't all glowy, you know, it was full apparition, but it wasn't, you know, the aura around it, right, you know, so, and what he was doing.
Hey,
was,
wait, Mike, we're talking to a 37-year-old, what does this kid know?
Right. See, that's the other challenge I come up with in this whole genre is, you know, I'm a punk, you know, kid in the eyes of everyone who's been doing this for years. So what the hell do I know? And he's just here to cause trouble, you know. So yeah.
If your cynicism's at 37 years old, God help you, man. When you reach our age,
I blame my father.
Right. So. and let me finish with this, Jeff. Taking here, you're not heavily have been involved in the field in either spirit, UFO research, that you've become a lot more like I have, which is limited in the field in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And I'm saying possibly yourself that you've gotten involved in this because of radio. And what you've seen is that you listen to these people tell stories for years that at first you had no reason to doubt. And when you began to Google and you began to check, you thought, well, wait a minute, I just spent 2 hours of my life listening to people tell me stuff. It was completely embellished and completely not true, but yet made it sound wonderful. Why do they do this? And you begin to go on a crusade of trying to find out yourself, thus creating your own show. Is that what we kind of have wound up here?
Yeah, exactly. And I created my show after my mom passed in 2000. It just turned 2011, January of 2011. She died. And I thought to myself, you know, what the hell am I doing with myself? I don't have anything out there with my name on it that I can be proud of and all that kind of stuff. Really, you know, this is before I had kids. You know, no, I had my son, and sorry, he was like 4 or 5 months, and I thought to myself, you know, in the end, being that it's always on the internet. Maybe someday when my kids get older and I'm not around, or maybe the grandkids and I'm gone, they can Google, you know, old granddad and hear some of his rantings and ramblings and get an idea of what he was like. You know, so, I mean, maybe it's just that kind of the draw of, you know, the possibility of the immortality that it brings, you know, that the radio and the internet and everything could bring. Maybe it's some of that to help out in posterity's sake, you know, to help give a frame of reference for future, you know, family members and all that. Because, you know, I had an aunt that was really big into tracking down our family tree and on both sides, the Plesher and the Ross side and the Ertl side and all that kind of stuff in the families. And, you know, there was a couple that stuck out. You know, there's direct relations to Sam Houston and there's direct relations to, Harry Houdini, you know, that came down the line and those bloodlines. And I was like, wow, that's crazy. Once she got into the actual doing the heritage part of our lives. And I thought, well, that's interesting as hell, you know, to me. And so I think, yeah, I mean, that's kind of where it started, but it also, you know, gave me, it also was a hobby too. I mean, it's kind of multifaceted, you know, it's always good for posterity, I think. And plus it's good to go back and listen to how I was way back, you know, 4 or 5 years ago and hear how I was treating it versus now and how I've changed, good, bad, you know, and how I've gotten, and how it's progressed or degressed, you know, digressed, whichever that somebody wants to put it. But when you talk about what do I believe in with aliens, oh, the paranormal thing I want to tell you one more time real quick that I saw was my grandfather standing in the hallway. He was looking at a wall, right? And this is, there was like nothing on the wall at the time that was important. But later on through the years, that's the wall that got like all the sports accolades and all that kind of stuff. And it didn't click until, you know, later on in my life that, my God, you know, we have something, you know, there's a time and space aspect to this. You know, there really is. It's a lot like that movie Interstellar, you know, when at the end you finally see Matthew McConaughey is the one behind the bookshelf knocking the dust around and the books in and out and the Morse code and stuff like that. You know, it's throughout his child's life to try to communicate. And I thought, wow, it's... And if you haven't seen the movie, you don't know what the hell I'm talking about. And even if you have seen it, it's confusing as hell and interesting, and you'll have to see it a couple times. But I thought, my God, you know, here's, you know, he looked at the wall, looked at me, and then turned and walked away, and that was it. You know, it was just like a stop in to see what was going on, and that's it. And at the time, I was still, you know, the only male grandson on that side of the family, you know. And one of my fondest memories is him taking out his teeth. You know, and me thinking that was the funniest thing in the world, you know. So, you know, I had a good time with him, with the great grandfather there. But when it comes to Bigfoot, I always like to make fun of my buddy Jeff Pritchett about Bigfoot and his skunk ape that he's got in his woods and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I'll entertain the Bigfoot talk and all that, because I do believe that, you know, the world is still a big enough place and there's still corners of it where something could be going on that exists. But that, you know, once I bring in the logistics of it, you know, we're talking 7, 8 foot, 300, 400, 500 pound, gonna have to eat every day, all day. You know, the logistic aspects of a Bigfoot, it really starts to diminish my belief capacity, so to speak, right? The logic comes in and the fun goes away, and, you know. So, with aliens, you bet your butt I believe there's something out there that exists that's definitely smarter than us and able to traverse the galaxy and come and go as they please. You know, it's just impossible for me to think the odds are against that kind of thing. Whether or not they have made themselves known to us, you know, by saying, you know, by making themselves visible, you know, that's another story, because all my stories and my contacts and stuff I talk about, I haven't seen anything. I've got no little gray man that comes in, but I sure do have a lot of, no, you know, blackout going on, you know?
Right. And I was going to say, we're running short on time. I'm going to share a final thought with you and throw it back to George is that maybe you can come back on with this. I recently moved to a new area in the Dallas-Fort Worth area and had been lucky enough to, have communication with a deceased government man that has explained to me that the Bigfoot sightings that we're seeing, the reason we have not captured one, are actually the aliens. where else on this, Kenny? So maybe you'll be back for this one night. We'll just
That's something I don't, you know, it's like I told Pritchett, I believe in the magical Bigfoot, okay? You know, if I'm going to believe in a Bigfoot, I'm going to go all out and say he can come and go as he pleases and time, space, you know, why not? Why not strap that on him? Because, we, you know, there's nothing physical there yet, and like I said, if I'm going to, you know, suspend my belief, I'm going to have some fun with it. So, yeah, I don't discount that at all.
Exactly.
You know, why not? Why not make him have, the, you know, that ability? You know, it's not like anybody's got a Bigfoot trap and a net with one in it. You know, come on.
That's right. And we can discuss my ideas for traps.
Ah, there you go.
Which,
there's a good YouTube, a guy on YouTube that I hit up, Bigfoot Hunting. It is, not with the G on there. He's kind of funny. He's a good time. I've had him on talking to him. So, yeah, I'll have Bigfoot people on to talk about it just to get it out there and mix it up a little bit, you know.
Yeah, we definitely, let's see, we got to get you back up on here on a Monday again. I mean, this first time we did the simulcast, I think it went off successfully. For our listeners, they want to continue to pick up on your shows and podcasts. Where can they find all of the link information, sir?
For me, you can check me out on SoundCloud.com, Podbean, or iTunes. Just go ahead and search Mind Cemetery, or on SoundCloud, SoundCloud.com/UPRN. The UFO Paranormal Radio Network's where I'm at, Mondays 9 to 11 Eastern. So simulcast works out perfect on Mondays for us. You know, I'm a big fan of the Finucci saying, everybody can wet their beak, and that's fine with me.
And that's the important part. It's not about the competition. It's about the coalition. And
right.
I think that this was one of the perfect examples tonight. Can't thank you enough. I mean, the 2 hours flew by. There was a lot to cover. There's still so much more to cover.
Right.
And I think there's more to be uncovered with regards to this whole ufology Roswell scandal. So we'll both probably keep tabs on it and maybe approach this this topic again here fairly soon, sir.
Yeah, you bet your butt. And everybody out there listening, be sure to look out for where Don Schmidt is talking and listen to what he says, because that will tell you what they're talking about. He already let the cat out of the bag that there was a plan, and I fully believe, and we didn't get into it, that there was a rebranding that went on during contact in the desert. So stay tuned to all that, and you get to see what gets to happen from here on out.
There we go. Chip, let me let you go so you can close out your end of the show, and we'll do our promos for the rest of the week. And we thank you again for joining us on Primetime.
You got it, George. Thank you for having me. And, Mike, thanks for coming on, and it's always good to have a good conversation with good people.
You bet.
Thanks, sir. All right, take care.
Take care.
Thank you for using Blog Talk Radio. Goodbye.
All right, so there you have it right there, the straight dope on Dead Air Paranormal there with George Lopez and Mike Bowler. I know it was a lot of me talking and not a lot of Mike, but that's okay, and I guess that happens sometimes when you get to rambling and carrying on, because you got to feel each other out and you got to see what the hell each other's thinking. And we even got to hear a little bit from Andrea, so hopefully Joe is still cranking there if you give me a high sign in the Pal Talk chat room. I know it wasn't a lot of room for people to get in with calls and everything like there. And I see two cherries going on and a thumb, so everybody gets to hear me. Thank you very much. It's still working as intended, as they say. So, yeah, like I said, sorry we couldn't get in a lot of calls, if any. You know, it was just Andrea got to jump in there and talk about some, you know, my comments towards some people. And I expected her not to be too big of a fan of that. And I'll probably see him on Tuesday and... You know, it's hard. You know, they brought up some very good points. You know, is it, you know, what are we doing here? Is it doing any good? And like I said, I think we are definitely providing a voice to a lot of voiceless folks out there that do enjoy the UFO paranormal phenomena and do want to hear a different opinion than the absolute love fest that goes on each and every week. That doesn't mean I'm incapable of loving people. I love people all the time. I love Joe. I love stroking his flowing locks every week. So I'm not an incapable, crass bastard, you know, all the time. And I'm not incapable of being told that I suck or where I should straighten it out. So, you know, or change my opinion, all that. That's when you really know that you got someone that you can't really deal with. And it's usually the folks that refuse to apologize for their mistakes and people that refuse to change their opinion based on good and new information that they're being provided. So, you know, like I said, I've got folks out there that like to shoot me information, and I appreciative of those people. I appreciate you. You know, if I could spit it out right when I'm fooling around. And again, I like to tell people, you know, don't take offense if I don't friend you on my personal page. I keep it fairly locked down and devoid of a lot of shenanigans. And just head over to the Mind Cemetery Facebook page. Like that, you usually see what I'm into. I also hang out on some other pages that I probably don't need to be posting my opinion at any more than I already do. So we are at the end. Next week, we're going to have another one of them shows you can't miss. The one and only, the world famous Cal Korf. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Cal Korf, the man you love to hate, is going to be on next week. And we're going to find out what he's been up to, what he wants to do with himself, and where he's going to go. Because right now, ladies and gentlemen, the way things are, I'd really like to know what the difference between Cal Korf and the rest of these people out here that are busy scamming you. What's the difference? You tell me next week. Thanks for listening to Mind Cemetery Dead Air Paranormal Joint. We'll be back next week, 9 to 11, right here on UPRNTalkRadio.com. Check us out on SoundCloud.com/UPRN, Podbean, and iTunes. Take us away, Taliban Joe.
Welcome to Skype, the people in the audience, and I'm also going to present photographs and reports of the physical evidence that Betty and Barney observed, and also the forensic paintings of the aliens who abducted them that were painted by the late David Baker, an artist from New Hampshire, and Patrick Richard, an artist from New Mexico, who was a friend of Betty Hill.
Well, after having read both Captured and, oh gosh, I read Interrupted Journey like 3 or 4 times, and seen the movie, and I think that was my introduction to the Betty and Barney Hill case back when I was in high school. You know, after having read those, I think it would be really good to see your presentation with the slides of the different locations. Because, gosh, when they went through there at night,